The views expressed on the Creative Cities show are not necessarily those of its sponsors or any organization that the host is affiliated with.
Good morning, Tucson, and welcome back to the 1030 The Voice studio. This is Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping the future of Tucson. In-depth news and talk every day here on this show and on the other shows here on this station, live and local or otherwise. We welcome you into the beautiful studio here at 1030 The Voice. I'm looking forward to spending this hour with you. It's going to be an hour with you. It is you and me in studio, Tucson. I want to do a deep dive and a conversation, a live one with you today, about minimum wage. Minimum wage went up again here effective January 1st, 2020. Want to walk through that, where it's come from. I'm going to try to also talk through what I think it means for workers and businesses, why it may not be enough, and what I think the real solution is. So help me out. Regardless of where you land on this topic, I want to hear what's on your mind. 790-2040. That'll take us through most of the show. We want to talk about the people, the ideas, the issues that are shaping the future of Tucson. This is a big one, and so it's relevant to talk about. Just less than a week ago, officially it went up to $12 an hour. So we'll get into that in a minute. And I mentioned that live line, 790-2040 on Tuesday. It's our special Why I Love Where I Live live line. Why I Love Where I Live is a retail location and a social media movement that helps people appreciate and discover where they live here in Tucson and what there is to love about it. If you haven't been to their shop at the Mercado San Agustin Annex, they're on the west side of the 10 at I-10 and Congress. Instead of going into downtown where we normally do, we'd take our right instead or left, whichever direction you're coming from, head a block over west to the Mercado San Agustin, and they're in the shipping container complex there. That if you haven't checked out the shipping container complex, you totally should. It's a really cool spot. Less than a year old, maybe about a year old in Tucson. Time flies. So we thank Why I Love Where I Live for sponsoring our live line today, 790-2040. So one of the things that spurred this hour about minimum wage on was a post from Dustin Williams, actually superintendent of schools Pima County, and I'll share this post probably in the second segment, but it was really interesting. But here's kind of the state of things. The Fair Wages and Healthy Families Act, which was approved by voters in 2016, put in place a progressive increase of Arizona's minimum wage from $8 an hour-ish, it was $8.05 at that time, still higher than federal, by the way. I think federal is still in the sevens, to $10 in 2017, to $10.50 in 2018, and to $11 in 2019, and we're at $12 now as we turn over into 2020. And the idea is that as inflation changes, the minimum wage will track with that. And here's what I want to get into, at least for the next couple of segments, and we'll take your calls on that. I have an interesting viewpoint on this issue, and I think it's less philosophical maybe than I hear out and about there, where we've created, I think, this narrative where you are either pro-business and anti-worker, or anti-worker and pro-business. I think the narrative is wrong. I think it's the wrong way to look at it. And we'll get into that in the second segment most likely as well. But here is my pragmatic view on minimum wage. And I want your call, 790-2040. I want to know if I have any blind spots, what you see differently. I think that we've turned a corner where the minimum wage is not enough and it's no longer going to work. And here's what I mean. The living wage in America today, I would say, is more between $20 and $25 an hour. Whether you're working for yourself, whether you're working side gigs, whether you're a freelancer, whether you're working a job, in my mind, the cost of living today requires the average American worker to be making $20 to $25 an hour as a floor. And this isn't just me saying this. This isn't a conservative think tank. This isn't a left of center think tank saying it. It's kind of all of the above, that we've gotten to a point where, you know, 12 is great, 15 would be great, but it's really not going to cut it anymore in the America we live in. And so my view on the minimum wage is I don't think that it is going to cut it for the American worker. And I don't think that we can regulate or get a minimum wage up to where a living wage is. And so I have a more pragmatic approach, and we'll get into it in the rest of the hour. And my pragmatic approach is this. I think that the real solution is not a raising of the minimum wage, but I think it is a more of a pathway, more of a workforce development issue. In other words, how do we make it so that, and I'm thinking about, you know, even the 20 to 30 year old worker who may be in a restaurant or fast food or something that is paying that $12 to $15 an hour. How do we not make it so that they're stuck in that spot, but that they have the opportunities, the education, the access to both, to be able to earn higher and higher wage jobs? I don't think that we can regulate this increase high enough for it to matter long term. And I think, and we'll get into this in a minute, I think in the long term, it also hurts business and employment. One of the things that was interesting that I didn't realize is that Arizona now has the fourth highest minimum wage in the country, which is really interesting to me. And we'll talk about this impact on education, because I thought Dustin Williams' comment was really interesting. There's only a couple of other states that have a higher minimum wage. So Colorado and Maine have $12 an hour, and the District of Columbia has $14 an hour. And then you have Arizona. So Arizona is in the top five of the state mandated minimum wage. Again, the federal is much lower. But I think what we are in an economy, that we are in a period of automation, that we are in an era where, you know, I don't think that across the board increases of minimum wage is the short or long-term solution. I think it's something different. And I want to get into that after we come back from the break. And I'll tie it into an article that came in over the week, and it has to do with rents and housing. But there's a little something in there that if you're not looking for it, you may not catch. But I think I caught it, and I want to share that with you. We're talking minimum wage increase here. January 1st, less than a week ago, the Arizona mandated minimum wage went up from $11 an hour to $12 an hour. What does it mean for workers and businesses? Why it may not be enough, and what I think the real solution is. That's what we're covering here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. In-depth news and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping the future of Tucson. If you called in, we'll get to your call in just a minute. We're going to go to a quick break. 790-2040 is the Why I Love Where I Live live line. Give us a call, and we'll chat about this more in just a minute. Don't go anywhere, Tucson. We'll be right back.
trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Hi, this is Jason with Keller Williams Realty. Today I want to share a pricing strategy with you that I would call speculative. It's where we take a home's fair market value and we would speculate a bit above that price and hope that a buyer is going to come along and pay top dollar due to its unique demand. Stay tuned next week for another pricing tip. Call me if I can help with anything at 520-310-6761.
Good morning, Tucson. Welcome back to the 1030 The Voice studio. You're listening to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Daily, in-depth news and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping the future of Tucson. And we are doing a bit of a deep dive today on a relevant topic. Less than a week ago, the minimum wage in Arizona mandated went up to $12 an hour and up from $11 in 2019. I wanted to kind of get into my view on the issue, why I think that from a worker standpoint, this is actually not enough, and what I think as a community, how we need to be thinking about the issue of cost of living and wage, what I think the longer-term solution is. And I have a conversation with you about it. Let's see. Looks like we have Tom, who called in 790-2040, our Why I Love Where I Live live line. Tom, you're live. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity. I just have a real hard time with saying, with taking a number and saying it's not enough. If you live in L.A. and you wash dishes, you need $15, $20 an hour. If you live in downtown San Francisco and you wash dishes, you need $15, $20 an hour. The problem is you get five kids to wash dishes, and only one of them can do it. It's not even, I mean, education is the whole problem we've got. The biggest problem, we said in the 90s we were going to go STEM and get rid of liberal arts and stuff and make all our kids competitive, and didn't work. Just didn't happen. So when you talk a number like that, it's really kind of, it's offensive, you know. If you live in a little burg, you're going to shut everything down because of minimum wage. Minimum wage hurts the poor because it hurts the people that own a restaurant on Drexel. It hurts the people that live around there. Those restaurants are done. They're finished. They're over. You can't run a restaurant there with a minimum wage of $12. It used to be $8. You could hire, especially if you do three meals a day. You're finished. If you live in Fresno and you put a big minimum wage in California, does it affect San Francisco at all? No. Does it affect any other big city? No. So they thrive, their restaurants thrive, everybody moves there so they can live near things that are happening. And the little places that maybe don't have as attractive a geographical scene, or for whatever reason, the properties cheaper, everything's cheaper. And so you can go into the desert and you can buy a piece of land and you can say, I'm going to build a restaurant here with my own two hands, and I'm going to make mud adobe and do it. I mean, the way you're thinking is so counter to that reality. It's so against that reality that there are different places and different economies. And you know, our whole success as America is kind of based on that, on that reality that we've forgotten.
Tom, I appreciate your call. You raised a couple of things that I first wanted to clarify, and maybe I was trying to be a little too nuanced. If you gave us a call, hang in for a second. We'll get to you in a minute. Our Why I Love Where I Live live line is, what I'm saying is actually exactly what you're saying, Tom, and maybe I didn't get there fast enough in the first segment, is I don't think that you can raise the minimum wage ever high enough to where we need to be now, where the minimum wage alone can be a living wage. So what I'm saying is, I think we need to figure out how do we help train people into higher wage positions, that there is a pathway there. I don't think you try to solve it with the minimum wage. And my point actually, Tom, is I think in Tucson particularly, I'm concerned because we are a food and beverage industry dominated economy, and 60% of those food and beverage companies are actually family and independent owned. And so Tucson doesn't really have that safety net of a corporate headquarters somewhere else. It's the men and women on the street doing the work and trying to hire. And so what I think is happening is that we are trying to solve a problem that we can't solve with the minimum wage, and in the process are making it harder for people to employ other people. And we actually in Arizona saw a dip in people hired in the food and beverage industry. So I just wanted to make that clear, Tom, is that we're actually on the same page. And if I didn't get there fast enough, I apologize. The other thing before we get to our other callers on the line is that one of my other challenges, and it was interesting to hear even Democratic candidate Andrew Yang say this on an interview recently, is we've created this idea that all businesses are Amazon, right? That all businesses are sitting on this endless stream of cash, and if only they were told to do it, they would be paying people more. And I can tell you, before I came to what I've been doing in the last year, I was in management for one of those small family-owned businesses in Tucson. And looking at those profit and loss statements, nothing could be further from the truth. There's Amazon, and then there's the mom and pop down the street. And I think we make policy based on Amazon, when the reality is our mom and pops are the real men and women that are 90% doing the work, and they get hurt by well-meaning policies that don't match the local reality. And so my thought is, if we're not going to solve the problem with the minimum wage, I'm going to look in a different direction. And that's what I'm trying to get to here in this hour. Let's go to line three. It looks like we have Greg on line three. He called our Why I Love Where I Live live line 790-2040. Greg, you're live. Thanks for calling in.
You bet. Thanks, Zach. When I lived in Southern California some years ago, I was doing remodeling, and if I needed a helper or two, I'd pull into the Home Depot and I'd get six or eight or nine different, mostly folks from Mexico or Central America, and I would hire one. The going rate was $50 a day back then, and that was standard. It was fair. A minimum wage would continue to put people out of business. It's a shame that government needs to get involved in something like that, because as the previous gentleman, was it Tom, saying, it's just ludicrous for government to try to dictate what a business should do. Let me give you an example. PSA used to be an airline in Southern California, Pacific Southwest Airlines, and they were struggling at the time. And you know what the union, the workers did? They said, well, why don't we take less money to keep the company afloat? And I was really surprised at that, because when does that happen? And it really, it's just a whole idea of free enterprise. We have to emphasize free enterprise. We're lucky to have Donald Trump in office, because let's face it, he knows business. And I'd love to see in his second term him start to whittle away at the bureaucracies, at the entitlement programs, which are, as we all know, a waste. So I'll wrap it up by saying I don't care what other states are doing with minimum wage. You mentioned Maine, probably an extremely left-leaning state. That's why they have it there. And here we have so many liberals that, you know, they passed that law here. But, God, it'd be great to eliminate minimum wage entirely and just let the buyer dictate, you know, let the business owner dictate. Thanks for your time, Zach.
Yeah, Greg, no, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Here's something I'd love your input and feedback on, because I don't think that today's worker should get paid the federal minimum wage. It's not high enough. It's just not. But at the same time, my hunch would be, and I'm, and for those who know me, I believe in the market, but I'm not the most extreme free marketer you ever met. In fact, nothing could be further from the truth. But I do think that in many cases, the market adjusts for itself. And one of the areas where I think it would is, I don't think that a company could stay in business paying someone $7 an hour. Right, they're legally allowed to do that unless the state has said something else. But you're not going to get employees to stay for that little. So you're going to have to pay a competitive wage. You know, I can tell you with the family-owned business that I was a part of, I didn't own it, but I was in management of it, on our own, of our own initiative, and not everybody does this, so I'm realistic to that. We paid higher than the market because we wanted to, but when we started to get told what we had to pay, then it got hard to make good decisions for both the business and the worker, and I can tell you the P&Ls started to look super rough, and it was a really hard season because the jumps were just really high. It was 50 cents in the beginning for the first couple of years, and then it was year over year. It was $1 an hour increase. I got a few more thoughts on this, but I don't want to leave Ingrid hanging on the line. She's been patient. She called the Why I Love Where I Live live line, 790-2040. Ingrid, I've got a minute, but you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Earlier you talked about $25 per hour. On what are you basing that need? Are you deciding how many people, how many children people should have in their family? These are personal decisions. Your lifestyle is your own personal decision. And the free market is the best decider of what happens. When the labor union offered to take a lower compensation, they were thinking very intelligently. They knew that their jobs were on the line, the whole business was on the line, and they acted accordingly. Let the private market take care of what it should take care of and keep the government out of everything.
Ingrid, I appreciate the call there, and I'm going to come back to some of the things you mentioned on the other side of the break, because I want to tell you kind of where I get that calculation. And by the way, I want to make it clear as we wrap up here, I'm not saying the minimum wage should be 25. In fact, quite the opposite. I'm saying we can't get there. We can't regulate that high. And so how do we get people to a living wage? I don't think it's a minimum wage increase. I think it's something else. I want to give you my math after the bottom of the hour news break. I want to tell you what I think my solution is. And then a little nugget I caught in the news the other day. We'll be right back. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 1030 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, a daily news and a discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping the future of Tucson every day, 9 to 10, here on 1030 The Voice. And we're talking a relevant topic in light of the mandated minimum wage in Arizona going up on January 1st from $11 an hour to $12 an hour. And I'm trying to walk through with you, and we have been for the last half an hour, just some of my thoughts on this. And I opened up by saying that I have less of a philosophical approach to this issue as much as I do a pragmatic approach. And let me share the math on that. It's quick math. But our last caller asked, you threw some numbers out there of what a living wage should be and what a living wage needs to be. And I hope I clarified that I'm not saying that this is what the required wage should be. I'm saying that some way, somehow, I think that there is a living wage, a basic living wage that goes above and beyond anything that we could mandate. And so I think there's a different solution to help people better match costs of living than to mandate a wage increase. Not because of a partisan politic, not because of a philosophy, just pragmatically. I think we've turned a corner in the economy. Unfortunately, in many ways, where the government mandating just can't keep up, whether you agree or not, whether the government should be doing it, I'm saying pragmatically, I don't think that the government can keep up with the economy. And so we have to figure out a different way. And I'll get to that by the end of the hour. But here's my quick math on that. And this gets back to an article I'll share with you, that the little nugget in the news that caught my eye. But it talks about how rents have gone up from $600 a couple years ago a month to kind of an average of $800 or $1,000 a month for rent in a basic workforce apartment. So here's the quick math that I'm doing, right? If you take $800 for rent and $200 for energy costs. You're looking at your cost, your basic home cost of living of $1,000. The federal definition of housing costs burdened is 30%. In other words, if you're spending more than 30% on just your housing costs, your housing cost burdens and your budget is probably burdened as well. So I'm just going to put this out there, and you can disagree with me if you want. Give me a call, 520-790-2040. It's our Why I Love Where I Live live line today here on Tuesday the 7th. But I'm going to say that's the floor of middle class American living is what I'm going to say. I think the floor, like basic American middle class, I think below this is a negative. I think if you're middle class America, you should be at this level. You should be at the very minimum, in my mind today, making $3,000 a month. Right? If we're going to say housing costs, energy costs, turn your lights on is $1,000, and you don't want that to be more than 30% of your income, $3,000 is, I think, the absolute floor. Right? To get to that a month, if you're working a 40-hour work week, right? I'm doing rough math, but even if it's less than this, right? If you're working 160 hours a week, you need to gross $18.75 after tax, right? After everything's pulled out, you need to be making a little under $19 an hour. So that's where I'm getting the number. Please don't hear me to say like we should, you know, next year regulate to this number. In fact, that's the point that I'm pushing back on in this hour. But I'm saying that absolute floor, middle class America, if you're making less than $19 an hour, I think that you are unreasonably strapped. You're not living in middle class America. So that's where I get my $20 to $25 an hour bare minimum. I think median is $25 to $30. And I think we got to have higher wage paying jobs in Tucson that pay you $30 plus. I think that should be the goal. So what I'm saying is I don't think that we are in a position where we can federally or state mandate a minimum wage in the near future that is anywhere close to $20 or $25 an hour to get to a living wage. Our minimum wage increases don't even get people close to a living wage, and we can't even get there with inflation increases. So I'm trying to make the weird but pragmatic point that I think that there's a different way that we have to be looking at this. But that's the math that I'm working off of. I'll jump back to that in a minute. Let's go to our live line. Carlos called in, and I'd love to hear what you have to say, Carlos. I appreciate your time. Go for it.
Hi. Hey, Zach. I own a business. I have three employees, and I've always paid higher than minimum wage because it's light manufacturing, so that has to have a higher skill set. Yep. But then I've also, I just stepped down from the Tanca Verde Unified School Board, last month. And so I read Dustin's post.
Yeah.
He is right on as far as, the effect that the minimum wage has on school districts. It's in a district the size of TUSD, it's millions of dollars. In our district, it was a few hundred thousand dollars. But the thing is I think he missed it that he says the state doesn't provide the funding. Well, it was an initiative process, so the state is not required to provide the additional funds. That's the voters decided it, and so the school districts have to comply with this mandate, even though it's not funded. So we had to do the challenge of looking at these lower wage, less skilled employees and consolidate.
Right.
You have to. That's what you have to do. You just have to consolidate.
Yep.
And you have to make hard choices, and you have to make changes. And that's what we've done, because we also need to make sure that we're adequately paying the teachers. Who are doing the work of education. So, I mean, I agree completely with you that if you improve the prospects of the adult, a lot of other things will be solved. The challenge is how do you improve the prospects of 100% mm-hmm. of your population? That, you know, so I'm dealing with with the minimum wage increase, I want to make sure my guys are a certain amount above minimum wage, especially at my lowest paid guy.
Right.
But my higher end guys, I'm going to have to do as we go into future years, I'm going to have to figure out other ways to compensate them, either through one-time bonuses or other things that are not just dollar an hour wage, because I could price myself
sure
out. And then a high minimum wage, like I think you also said, somebody trying to start a business is usually not going to start an Amazon. They're going to start a restaurant, a coffee shop, something, a small service. And at too high of a wage, you can't scale it, because there's always this point where you don't have enough revenue to cover the expense of your labor, especially right. in a higher labor type service. So it's very, I've been a vocal opponent of this, but it passed, but now I think a little bit we're starting to see some of the cracks that this is exposing.
Carlos, I appreciate your call and your experience, and thank you for teasing the Dustin Williams post. I'm going to read that on the air in the next segment, because I had never thought of this, the impact on our education system. I just had never thought about it. Carlos, I appreciate your call. Thanks for checking in. And one thing that I wanted to mention there too as well is the other element of this I'm hearing more and more about. And by the way, if you are a minimum wage increase proponent, I want to hear from you. This is not an anti-good wages, anti-worker, anti-minimum wage program. This is a pragmatic look at, hey, we want to benefit workers. We want to be competitive. We're pro-worker. Is this working out like we thought it would? If you are in a position where it is, this is your show as well. 790-2040 is our Why I Love Where I Live live line. For business owners, what I'm also hearing is wage compression. In other words, if you started a worker out at $8 an hour 10 years ago, and they're now up to $17 an hour, and you hire someone today, you have to pay that person you hired today $12 an hour. Right, which means that the person who's been with you for 10 years but is only getting paid nominally more has every right to come to a business owner and say, hey, wait a second, I've worked for you for 10 years. This is called wage compression is a technical term, but it's, hey, I worked for you for 10 years. What do you mean this guy gets to jump in at this rate? So there's a lot of interesting dynamics. I want to read this this part of an article that came out just the other day about the 2020 increase. And this is interesting. The wage increases have indeed put more purchasing power in the hands of combined food prep and serving workers, including waiters and waitresses, but there were fewer jobs to be had. In fact, there was a 9.8% decrease of waiter and waitress jobs and a 1.7% decrease of food workers. Less qualified, less productive workers were most likely the ones who lost their jobs. They may have found other jobs, for sure. We have to factor that in. Employers need help. It's a tight labor market, so I'm sure there's a lot of shift. But also automation has a part to play in this. If you are a cash register person at McDonald's, your days are numbered. Have you walked into the McDonald's on the east side? I think it's even Midtown. I can't remember the cross streets. But they are ignoring you. You are supposed to go up to a computer and order your food. It was the most bizarre experience. And I'm supposedly a millennial. It felt awkward to me because I didn't go in and talk to a person that was hired to talk to me. I went in to talk to a computer, and somebody brought me the food after I submitted and paid for my order on a computer screen that's bigger than the one I'm looking at now here in a 1030 The Voice studio. So there's some interesting dynamics in play here. When we come back on the air, I want to share two stories. One is the Dustin Williams post about how the minimum wage increase is pinching our education system. Fascinating stuff. Objectively, I'd never thought about it before. And he's actually, in my opinion, I think he'd be pro minimum wage increase, pro increasing school spending. In fact, I messaged him and asked him if he'd come on the air with me. And so, Dustin, if you're listening and I mischaracterized that, please come on the show and make sure that I've got my facts straight. But a really interesting approach there. And then I also want to share this article about rents increasing and pushing people out in Tucson. We think that means Section 8. It doesn't. These are people paying $800 to $1,000 a month, and they're working jobs that are well above the minimum wage increase. A little nugget there that I thought was interesting. We're having an open dialogue about the recent minimum wage increase to $12, what it means for businesses and workers, why I don't think it's actually enough, and what I think that the solution actually is. We'll wrap up after this final break. You're listening to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
We're Tucson's station for local news and talk. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson, welcome back to the program. Our rapidly moving hour that is mostly due to some great phone call engagement from our live listening community. It's one of the main reasons why I do this show and look so forward to it every day because of the interaction we get to have on issues that matter to us here in the community. We're talking about the minimum wage increase. It's not a new increase. It's been increasing since 2017, but on January 1st, it rolled over from $11 an hour to $12 an hour. And we're talking about what that means for workers and businesses, why I don't think that it's enough, and what I think the actual thought is going forward. Now I'll close with that. Real quick, so many of you listening are small to mid-sized business owners in Tucson. I appreciate that you are here and that you're listening. Whether you're big or small, I hope that 2020, and I believe it is going to be a year of growth for you and the time to bring on the right talent to continue your success. Here's the thing. It takes a certain skill and focus to attract, recruit, and discover just the person you're looking for. You can try it on your own. You might be good at it, but the majority of us aren't. Getting the right person to join your C-suite team, your management team, your frontline team, whatever the case, is a lot of work. And I would recommend that you get in touch with my friend Devin Underwood over at the Talent Store. She's a local talent strategist. She gets Tucson. She's a talented matchmaker and has a great track record of matching local companies up with the people they need to take their next step of growth as a company. If that's you, I want to encourage you to email info@yourtalentstore.com. Mention that I sent you, and you'll get a free 15-minute talent consultation to see where you go from there. So Carlos Ruiz, I'm assuming it's Carlos Ruiz, Carlos from Tanca Verde. So I put the two together, but Carlos called in and mentioned the Dustin Williams article. And I was really interested on this because first of all, I want to go back to the beginning, and I've said it a couple times that this is not a typical partisan or philosophical discussion on the minimum wage increase. For me, it's pragmatic. I did the math on the air, and I think that whether you are in the food service industry or whether you are working in a different industry, you need to be making $19 an hour after tax and withholdings to just be at the floor of middle class America today. So my case is that I don't think that we can regulate a minimum wage that gets us even close to solving the problem of a realistic wage that keeps up with cost of living. I'll touch on at the end here. I'm going to hurry through what I think the solution is. But what I do see, and we've seen it certainly across the state. In fact, we should have the mayor from Flagstaff on. She just passed a $13 an hour minimum wage, and she's not a Republican. She's not of a philosophical persuasion that would be anti this. They've had some major difficulties because it was too much too fast, and they regret what they're seeing, especially in their services economy. So we talk about businesses a lot, but Dustin Williams He is the Pima County School Superintendent. Wrote this post, and I'll read a little bit of it because I'm crunched for time. He goes, "I'm often asked, how does the minimum wage increase affect schools? After countless meetings with administrators and educational experts, the minimum wage increases pose a real challenge. Schools are not revenue driven and are subject to a set funding formula. So as the wages increase, schools struggle to find these dollars because they can't increase their revenue. Unlike a business, which can raise the price of goods or charge a bit more for service, a school must rely heavily on the state to provide additional revenue. Advocating for educational funding is essential. So it's very important to add the scenario to your dialogues." He goes on, "Do the numbers tell the story? The minimum wage per hour in Arizona for 2020 has increased to $12 an hour. It's the fourth highest in the country. All the other 44 states have a lower minimum wage per hour than $12. Our school spending, of course, is low comparatively. The problem is that since the state, and is his argument, did not make any adjustments to the K through 12 funding formula to reflect the impact of this increased mandated cost, schools were forced to take funds from other areas of the budget to fund the increased costs. Monies that would have been available for other purposes had to be used to fund the increased employment costs. Yes, the numbers tell the story. Arizona's K through 12 public schools have a number of employees that are subject to the increased minimum wage, and the salary increases required to meet this increase has had an impact on school budgets." He mentions that the minimum wage increase is not a bad thing in his mind, and of course he advocates for more state funding for public schools. But the impact of this, I think, and I read this yesterday, and I just this had never crossed my mind that our public school system doesn't have even the same built-in margin that a business might. At least a business can push off the cost to you, right? At least the business can raise their burger by $2 or can increase their product. At least they have that. Not always the best move, but at least they have that. Our schools do not. So I thought that was interesting. The last nugget that I wanted to share, and I'm rushing because I wanted to get this in, is there's an article that came out in the Star about how larger developers from out of state are coming in, flipping apartments, especially multifamily housing, and are increasing the cost because apparently there's enough demand out there. And it's displacing people who lived in the apartment, who can't on a dime spend $100 or $200 more a month on their rent. They just can't do that in 2 months, so they have to move out. We often pigeonhole that story into, well, that's Section 8. That's super low income. There were two stories of two women, two families in this article in the Daily Star. One was a hotel manager and one was getting a medical assistant degree, right? These were not food workers. These were not service workers. These were technical or management professions. They were paying $600, $800 a month on the apartment. They couldn't afford the jump from $800 to $1,000 that we're seeing since 2016. What stood out to me there is that we're looking at a situation where folks making over the minimum wage, working in technical or management positions, are not able to afford what the number that I came up with was even the floor cost of living in today's Tucson, not San Fran, not Boston, Tucson. And to me, that just says we're at a point where my concern is, and I'm willing to be persuaded by facts, my concern is that the solution of a minimum wage is no longer a solution. That lower wage workers will be the first to get hit by this, either by being fired or being automated out, and that this is a solution we're not going to solve by a mandated increase of wages. We're past that point. Where we have to be focused now is how do we create a pathway where someone who's in a lower wage job has the opportunity to get schooling, education, and training to be able to do the jobs that are coming up next. Pima Community College put together a program with Too Simple. You have to be a current truck driver. They will teach you how to drive an automated truck. That's an example of what I'm talking about. So for me, and we'll hit on this in coming shows, to me, the solution is workforce development. To me, the solution is increasing our higher wage jobs, both that we create out of the city and that we invite into the city, so that there is a pathway, education and profession, where people have a real shot at making that minimum $20 an hour. Guys, that's our floor. It's not 12, it's not 15, it's not 18, it's 20 to 25. This is the way that I see to get there. And I'm afraid in the meantime, especially in Tucson, being so locally owned, so family owned, that we're going to price out people who would do business and hire people if they could. It's a thought. Zach Yenser is a public page. You can go to message me, hit me up there, show me other facts, show me other things. I want to have an open dialogue, not a partisan, not a philosophical one, but a pragmatic one. Where is our economy and what are our best solutions look like for Tucson? I laid out what I think my ideas are. What are yours? What did I miss? Shoot me a message over there. Bill Buckmaster coming up at noon. Lots more live and local talk coming your way. This has been The Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice. Thanks again to Why I Love Where I Live for their sponsorship of our live line today. Tucson, we'll see you at 9 on Wednesday. Take care.